You are tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.
Now, some of the most influential myths are difficult to distinguish from reality because they seem true on the face of them, or that they are closer to the truth or reality. Now, knowing the difference between investing myths and reality can be your ticket to becoming a successful investor. And to join us for this conversation, we'll be talking to Patrick Mhlari, who will share some of the biggest myths about investing that you and I should avoid at this particular point in time. I think it's almost a silly season, hey Patrick, and some of us will start making silly decisions around our monies.
Yes. Good evening, Mr. Mloy, and your listeners. Always good to be here. But yeah, let's get started. I think what you just said is exactly what's going on.
Yeah.
In fact, today I was at a mall to see one of our clients.
Yeah.
And guess what? Property management is starting with the renovations.
You know? Oh.
To put the for sale signs on our faces, you know. Eesh. So yeah, definitely.
It is a silly season, so we must definitely be watching out for those silly things that they'll be putting up there. Well, as you know, it is Patrick Mhlari, a friend of the show. Really appreciate your time this evening. As always, how was your day, though?
My day was awesome. It's just one of those days. I know it was cold. I know it's people are telling me bad weather, but I don't know. It was a good day today. The whole country, people are friendly at four stops, you know. I think it's the bokeh effect,
sure.
You know, the euphoria. Yeah. And how was yours, Mr. Blue?
I get gloomy when the weather is gloomy. So yeah. Then there's a story behind it. Yeah. I don't like gloomy weather. So yeah, it's one of those things. So yeah, I felt a bit gloomy. I felt a bit down. But we are here. We thank the Lord that we are here despite the gloomy weather. And then of course load shedding had to make matters worse for people, and driving on the road between stops here and there, it's something that should take 2 minutes, takes 20 minutes. It's one of those things. But yeah, we thank the Lord that we are here. Now, we're talking about these common misconceptions about investing. Again, you and I maybe might have an understanding of what this investing thing is. But let's start by first defining it. What is investing? And I know this because we speak about it very loosely on an everyday basis. But when you fear to ask someone, What does investing actually mean? I think a lot of us would struggle with that, hey?
Yeah, for sure. Even seasoned professionals like myself, you know, I get asked that question, you know, and then, first thing it's like, let me attach, let me refer to my material, what does it say? And you get a complicated answer that needs you to have some postgraduate to just understand what it means, you know. So, I think over time, I've come up with a summary, which I think most people relate to, you know.
Yeah.
So if I was standing next to you, or if you had to be, or like you're asking me that question now, I would just tell you that investing, it's an opportunity to give your future self a financial advantage in the form of lump sum in the future, you know. But there's no other way of putting it, you know. If you tell people you want to beat inflation, okay. You are not
what is that already?
Yes. You know, so I just tell them it's an opportunity to give your future self a lump sum. No, we can do that by investing.
I love that definition. It makes perfect sense. An opportunity to give your future self a lump sum. So in other words, if you don't engage in investing, you are robbing yourself that opportunity.
100%.
I love that because then it places the risk, and I suppose it also places the burden on me, you know, to actually look at it and say, okay, what am I doing towards making sure that I don't only expect Patrick, who's a professional in this, to actually get me there, But it almost sounds like there is some bit of work that I need to come and do to make sure that I achieve that opportunity or that bigger lump sum that I want for myself.
So, I lost you a bit there, towards the end. I just said yourself, you know, that's all I got from you.
I was saying that from what I'm getting from your definition is that there is something that I need to do besides you as a professional who has to do some bit of something for that big lump sum that I'm looking at. But it almost places the obligation on the both of us.
Yes. Definitely. I always say, if we're not aligned, we're not going to get to the goal. You know, so I possess the tools to possibly help you get there, but you possess the, I think, the most intimate knowledge of you as the investor. You know, so and then if I may, I'll just like to say, I like what you say that you also have a responsibility, and that responsibility, that most people shy away from. It's the biases that we carry over time, you know. So, for instance, I suppose I saw a neighbor or a parent make a bad decision without knowing the story. You attach investment in that company with I know X and Y, you know. So those emotional or mental scars, if I may put them, you won't know them better than the professional. You know, the professional... Since late, you want to invest, but you might have some biases that have developed over time that you need to be aware of in order for you and the professional to reach that goal.
Yeah. Now, just before we even get into the common misconceptions and all that, I often find that we struggle between, I think I'm investing when in effect, technically speaking, I'm trading. And sometimes I think I'm trading when I'm investing. So what's the difference between these two things, really?
That one, it depends. It's our classical answer. But I think on this one, it holds water, you know. Because I know people that are in it for the long term and people that are in it for speculation, you know.
Yeah.
To say, I've got it on good authority that X and Y is happening, so therefore... I'm going to buy the shares, wait a few weeks, and, you know. But funny enough, even the avid investors sometimes speculate in their portfolio, you know.
Yeah.
So I think they have a place, they do coexist in your investment strategy somewhere, you know. So if I may just backtrack a bit, if you're telling me that, remember, the goal is the destination, right? To say, the future self that we're giving an opportunity to, would like to get X amount or would like to have certain style of lifestyle, you know? So to get there, I need to put X amount away and make sure that by that time it's double or triple, you know? So along the path, with the help of the expert and professionals, and obviously if you do it long enough, you might learn the cause and effect of investing. So you can sort of take different ways, you know. You can take a speculative stance, but I don't suggest that you do it on all your portfolio, you know. Maybe have a bucket there or a basket within your portfolio to say 80%, I know my truth, I know my not. I'm going on this difficult path of sometimes getting below inflation returns, you know. But in 10 years, I know I'll get X amount, you know. But 20%, I can manage to take a chance, you know. Because sometimes you trade and your call is wrong, you know. Sometimes it happens. Sometimes you trade and you lose all your wealth, you know. So separating the two, I think works. The majority of your investment strategy should be long term. Hold on. And then there should be a portion to say, this one I can play my dice, you know.
I can take a bit of a risk on this one.
for sure, that makes
sense, because I think sometimes we get it all wrong. When we think we are investing, can't we are trading some currency somewhere. And when that currency comes crumbling down, we think, oh, my money I invested. No. You weren't investing, you're trading currencies and all those. So that's very, very good. I thought we should just start there. Now, let's get into this one. What are the common ones? I'm sure there's a lot of these common reasons why people don't invest.
Yeah. So, Mr. Blue, I think now we're gonna put the puzzles together now.
Yes.
So, believe it or not, there is some science behind this. Right? So, in data collecting, most people don't like investing because they think they can't afford it. And I'm using the word "think" intentionally. You know, they look at what gets left at the end of the month and say, "I." Based on this, I don't think I can afford, you know. So it goes back to a conversation, my favorite topic of budgeting, you know.
Yeah.
But that's a topic for another day. But that's that's one that sort of times the all of them, you know, to say I can't afford it. But I've had people also tell me it's too risky, you know. So I'll just give you the top three that I've had and actually took me aback, you know. I can't afford it, it's too risky, and some people think it's a scam.
Sure.
Some people think sure. They read my account, you call my money, no. Yeah, so and I think those top three for me take the cake, you know, like I never thought of this, you know.
Is there a particular reason why? Is it some sort of attachment to their own money that people have, or the fear of losing the money? What seems to be the reason why they would think investing, for example, is a scam or is a bit too risky that they decide to actually chow the money?
So if there's something I think my industry is not doing enough of is to talk more of the behavioral finance aspects of financial planning, you know? Because what you're asking me, I think, stems more from that, you know? The fact that I'll give an example. During COVID, there was a time where people were trading. Some of them were buying shares and all and that, and buying cheap, selling high because of the impact of COVID, you know?
Yeah.
And then you see that on social media, like, ah, this thing is easy. I don't need a professional.
Yeah.
And then you jump on it.
Yeah.
You jump on it at the wrong time when the markets have turned, and then you lose 80% of your income. So behavioral finance will say right there that that experience there has created in you a bias, you know, that will take a lifetime to get rid of. So 10 years from now, I'll tell you, hey, let's do some investments. You'll tell me, hey, remember COVID? I bend my fingers. I don't cut these things, you know. So it stems from the, I think, the major part of it that's bias. And the other one that takes me aback, like so many times, is the people's lack of knowledge, you know. Ignorance in that field, you know. I kid you not, people who are super specialists or super successful in their fields, you just wonder, sure, that there's people actually trained to be technically good and not care how they take care of their money or a lot of things, you know. So a lot of thoughts come to you. But I think lack of education and people's biases. The other one, final one, the third one on those biases is you find it's a common one. I'm sure you'd relate to this one. You tell people, no, save for a child's education. And they tell you, no, my grandmother saved for our education. And guess what? When we go to varsity, nothing there, you know? So, but if you dig deep in that story, you find that the person who invested in that only paid a small amount and for a small period or a short period. And then obviously I won't tell you that, hey, Tapel, I didn't invest enough. I'll tell you, these investments don't work. And by so doing, and if you also take my word for it, another bias is being created in your cognitive process, you know. So I think that's the biggest one. That's the biggest one, the hearsay and the lack of education in the film.
That makes sense. I think I saw a thread on these platforms that young people use where someone was showing showing a screenshot of, look, my mother had taken out this particular policy with this particular company and this is what I got in the 15 years or so of investing. So I was shocked, personally speaking. I mean, I was like, 15 years, that's a lot of time. How many debit orders went out of this mom's money or whoever their parents' money is for them to only not even be able to cover first year registration? So it could be that, like you said, maybe they weren't really investing. They just invested for 2 or 3 months and then they cut that thing, never told their kids that actually, no, the money is not there. That's a hard one. Is there a way, I suppose, that maybe, you know, young people can help their parents with? Is it maybe looking for statements every month or something? Because I think abantu abadala don't have the prowess to even look at such things.
So every month, I'm sure that one, you remind me of a farmer who was looking over their eggs for every day, you know, and nothing happened. And it's like, no, there's no life here. I'm just cutting these, you know. So it's just to understand the process, you know. So the reason I answered you like that is because we can log in tomorrow after world leaders said something untoward to each other. And then we check our profiles. And then we find, yo, for this month, the markets are down -6%, negative even worse. This thing is not working. So that's the danger there. But I think the prudent one is to check it yearly. Okay. Most investment companies do send out statements quarterly. To say this is what happened in the quarter. But I don't believe that we should take decisions on events that happened in a quarter, you know, because if you're telling me you're investing for the long term, obviously for a child's education, I'd consider that long term. But in practice, we would say, okay, this person has time, they can take risks, you know, so let's put them in high equities. High equities has potential of high returns, but also the risk of low lows, you know. So you might find that COVID happens, we invested a lot in commercial properties because they were doing well and we believe in the long term they'll still do well, and then boom, there's no returns for commercial properties because people are working from home and your big companies in that category then lose value, you know. And then you look at the statement during the COVID time and you're like, I went out instead, I'll put this money outside my underneath my mattress, it's better than where it is there, you know. But those that stay in the market after that, after that event, do recover those losses, you see? So on an annual basis and understanding your why, why are you invested in that and for how long, then you should navigate. But yeah, to answer your question, sir, as young people helping our parents, we encourage them to do a financial review with the advisors once a year. Even the law requires that that gets done, you know.
Okay, that makes sense. Let's get into then the commonly held myths as well as reality about investing. Particularly, we heard, as you might know, you know, going towards the end of the year, where some people may be interested in taking a bit of risk in order to level up financially, especially with bonuses coming through. What are some of the common myths to look out for?
So the common myths that should also serve as red flags, I think, in that context, you know. So you'll find people telling you, no, if it doesn't double my money, then it's not a good investment, you know. And you're like, double money, yo, okay. That sounds too extreme, you know. So most people think like that, that if they can't double their money, therefore, it's not worth it, you know. That's not the aim, you know. And then so I guess that will fall under it will also fall under our misconceptions we have as investors, you know. So they are similar and run parallel in that regard, you know. So silly season, in the era of a click away, we solve your problems, you know. So you get an SMS now, December special, click here, double your investment in 2 months.
Already started.
But, you know, and then the other one though is that in order for you to make a good investment, you need to monitor daily. As I said, if you understand the why of that investment, you don't need to, you know. And then the third one, you'll see that I like three examples. I don't know why. then the third one, they'll tell you, you need to be rich, you know.
Yeah.
You need to be rich. So, no. I had, at one time, I had an intern. I'll credit him. Swiso Mututwane, who told us about the 10 cent challenge. You know, 10 cent a day. If you grow it every day, like you'd have some money for December. You know, I was like, really? Show me a spreadsheet there. And when he ran the figures, I think in December, if you started at 10 cents, you could have an excess of about 5,000. But you're doubling your investment on the, as you go along.
Sure. That's interesting. That's a lot of money by the end of the year with just 10 cents anyway. That's really interesting.
So you don't need to be rich. You don't need to be rich to start investing. The problem is not a lot of insurers or investment places would allow you to have a debit order of 10 cents.
The bank charges are more than that.
More than that, you know. So, so the practicality thereof as well comes into the fray, you know. Yeah. So,
But it does make sense. I mean, maybe it requires some sort of discipline when you put it under the mattress every day and all that. I actually know of a friend who has, a little jar where he actually puts all coins. Anything that's a coin, he puts it in there. You know, when he buys bread and they give him 2 rand or 2 cents back, puts it in that particular jar. Every single year, he comes out with about 5 to 7, 10,000 rands every year just from coins. And he uses that to buy stationery. He uses that to buy, you know, these little nice things that the kids want during December. So he's not feeling the pressure, you know, of stationery prices going up. And I also have a friend who already has received the list for next year in terms of stationery. I was like, ha! You know, these schools like giving us heart palpitations already in October. So I like the idea. I think that idea of once 10 cents doubling it up every other day does make sense, though. Now, I want to go back to this one. You said there's a myth that's being held that if it doesn't double the money that you have, then it's not worth it. Now, it almost seems like there's an understanding in the industry that it's only safer when it does not double up. So because there's this thing, if it sounds too good to be true, then it usually is not. And in those instances, it will be instances where the returns are actually double or significantly more. So is the industry saying it's comfortable with just marginal returns? So when you see an investment that just gives you marginal returns, then that's a safer investment?
Sure, that's a fair question. I see where you're coming from, but also a tough one in the sense that we've seen, as a current scholar of the industry, you know, but I think the COVID period held some key lessons for us, the observers and the scholars, to just take wisdom from, you know. So we have seen stocks, some asset classes drop value to as far as, say, 80%. And then you invested in that time. And then after a year, some of those stocks would get, say, 80% because they were correcting, you know. In that time, no, the industry didn't think it was too good to be true. We saw things were going back to normal, you know. But normal course of business, it's worthwhile for you as the investor to acquaint yourself with how these things work, you know. So I like the JC. It tells us a thing to know. So if you just look at good companies that you know, I don't have to mention them, but look at the toothpaste you buy, the drinks you consume at home, the stationery you use, and just find out who those owners are. And then see how much they are distributing or making in the market, you know? And then I think that will give you, I personally think that will give you an indication of what a good company is returning, you know? So if now your supposed investment promises you 100 times than that, I'm speaking now. I'm speaking as an investor, a possible investor. So, I wouldn't. I've met people that have made so much money in, say, cryptocurrency because they timed it right and they got returns far, 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 doubling what we're speaking about, you know? And then in the same breath, when other people tried it, it was different, you know? So if you recall in the beginning of our conversation, I was just talking about your investment strategy. So in there, then there is the opportunity to say, okay, the world is changing. I agree. I concede that the way we viewed investments in the past and what's happening now is totally different things, right? But I also assert that the tried and tested asset classes are still performing more or less what we expect them to, you know? The equities are going extremely up and extremely down. It's expected. It's nothing new, you know. But there's new asset classes. I hear people are investing in NFTs, you know, the collection of photographs there. If you recall 3 years ago, that one that was bought for a record price of some crazy amount has lost so much value. So if you took your money and bought NFTs, you'd have lost, you know. So it depends. So in your investment strategy, you have to say, I'll keep to the boring, and I use that word carefully, you know, boring, tried and tested. That will give me inflation plus a couple of percentage, you know, but that's it. But within this, I also want to create an opportunity fund, whereby I can learn new asset classes that are emerging. I'm mentioning cryptocurrencies because the regulator wants advisors in the future or in the near future now to understand how cryptocurrencies work. So it's something that's, but it's new. There's no historical data to go on. But you are a reasonable man, I'm sure. Your listeners are as well. Just check the returns that are happening now. It's proving the wise, typical orthodox advisors, right? You know, to say it's so unpredictable. You don't want to be invested fully in there, you know. You want some level of comfort, you know, especially if you're investing for a child's education. You don't want to be told, the market has wiped up all your case. You don't want that. For retirement, you don't want to work 30 years. I know you once told me you for the yacht life. Told you,
definitely.
Hey, save this money. 30 years from now, you'll be on your yacht. And then it happens that it doesn't happen, you know, because the market evaporated. So those are the risks that one has to weigh, you know, before we take that decision.
I suppose I'm trying to contend here for my listeners that please, guys, the guys in the industry, you know, I know you are a very seasoned professional, but please, man, the other guys must not be comfortable with just giving us 1% and they're saying it's safer. You know, it's better than going the other route. We're going the other route because we want money, guys. Let's be honest. We want money. So please give us a little bit more in your strategies and all that when you're like devising, you know, how things should be done from here. But I wanted us to end it here, Mr. Patrick, with It's like I said, it's silly season. We are going to see quite a lot of invest in this, invest in that. What's your one message to people? And we say these things every year, but every year we are falling into these scams.
So the one that I learned from a Leonard client, someone I respect in the legal industry, told me something. You and I know it, but we've never, I had never thought about it like he put it, you know. He said, there's no quote that expires in 24 hours, never. And there's no seller or supplier who has that one stock. There's no way you can ever store and stock one thing, one item, never, you know. So it's always wise to take your time. So if somebody approaches you and say, here's an investment opportunity, act now, what, remember that a Leonard, a client of Patrick, said there's no quote that expires in 24 hours. So once you see signs like that, run, go the opposite direction, you know. But then, even scripture tells us there's nothing new under the sun. This festive season is a fest to people that are turning one, but year on earth, it's as equal to the years, you know. So it's a season that if you had not planned and budgeted for, I know it's hard. It's Black Friday, you know, things that appear sales and are not sales. But if you did not budget for it, and that's my first conversation with you, then don't do it. Don't do it. If it's not in your budget, don't do it. But for 2024, you can remember that nothing is new under the sun. Christmas will come again. You can start in January to say, before I spend my money, I'm going to pay myself first about 10% of my salary, if I can, into a savings account that I can access while I start. If I don't need to take this money every month, then I can put it into somewhere else, you know. So for now, I just need us and the listeners to reflect on a strategy for the next year, because there isn't enough time to budget 2 months for the silly season, you know, a month or a week. So let's stay in our lane. Let's budget for next year, you know. Hopefully before the year kicks off, we'll have a jam-packed session of budgeting tips and so forth. And then we can see where we can put that a 10-cent challenge into action. I can also call that intent is in the industry now, and then we can be, you know. But don't fall for the traps. If it's too good to be true, it generally is too good to be true. You know, it's not what it is.
That makes a whole lot of sense. Yes, it would be great to just connect on budgeting and all that before the start of the next year. Thank you so much for your advice and also for sharing your insights with us this evening. As always, it's a pleasure talking to you, and may God continue to bless you with your work.
Thank you so much, sir. Thank you so much for having me. As I said, this platform, I believe, especially today, I hope we warmed some a few households with our conversation, you know. So thank you, and then keep doing the good work that you do.
Thank you so much. God bless you too. Well, that was our conversation there with Mr. Patrick Mhlari today, talking about investing and looking at some of the misconceptions to look out for, especially as we prepare for 2024.
Tuned into Business Sense on Adventist World Radio, powered by SID Media.